rickshaw, my feet squelching as they made acquaintance with the sodden roadbed.
"Mister," said Juan, "you be careful now. I ain't earned a fair home yet."
"Don't go anywhere," I said, then thought better of it. "Listen, if this makes you nervous, leave and return in 5 minutes." This obviously struck him as excellent advice. The woman with the binoculars returned them to her exuberantly patterned greatcoat, while the goggled man reached up and made what was obviously a delicate readjustment of his optics. I walked calmly in their direction, paying more attention to their vehicle. It was a glossy black lozenge, resting on 3 retractable wheels. Through a tinted forward window I glimpsed upholstered seats facing complicated manual controls. What appeared to be 3 rotor blades were furled on the roof. But as I examined the mounting more closely, I saw that this wasn't any kind of helicopter. The blades were not attached to the body of the vehicle by a rotating axle, but vanished into 3 circular holes in a dome-like hump which rose seamlessly from the hull itself. And now that I looked closer, I saw that the blades were not really blades at all, but telescopic arms, each tipped with a scythe-like hook. That was all the time I had for sightseeing.
"Don't come any closer,"
the woman said. She backed up her words, spoken in flawless Canadian, by flourishing a tiny weapon, little larger than a brooch.
"He's unarmed," the man said, loud enough for me to hear, intentionally, it seemed.
"I don't mean you any harm." I spread my arms, slowly. "These are mendicant clothes. I've just arrived on the planet. I wanted to know about reaching the canopy."
"The canopy?" the man said, as if this was vastly amusing.
"That's what they all want," the woman said. The weapon had not budged, and her grip on it was so steady that I wondered if it contained tiny gyroscopes, or some kind of biofeedback device which acted on the muscles in her wrist.
"Why should we talk to you?"
"Because I'm harmless, unarmed, as your partner observed, and curious, and it might amuse you."
"You've no idea what amuses us."
"No, I probably don't. But, as I said, I'm curious. I'm a man of means." The remark sounded ridiculous as soon as I had spoken it, but I soldiered on. "And I've had the misfortune to arrive in the mulch with no contacts in the canopy."
"You speak Canadian reasonably well," the man observed, lowering his hand from his goggles. "Most mulch can barely manage an insult in anything other than their native tongue." He threw away what remained of his cigarette.
"But with an accent," the woman said. "I don't place it. It's off-world, but nothing I'm familiar with." "I'm from Sky's Edge. You may have met people from other parts of the planet who speak differently. It's been settled long enough for linguistic drift."
"So had Yellowstone," said the man, feigning no real interest in this line of debate. "But most of us still live in Chasm City. Here the only linguistic drift is of vertical."
He laughed, as if the remark were more than just a statement of fact. I wiped rain from my eyes, warm and viscous. The driver said the only way to reach the canopy was by cable car.
"An accurate statement, but that doesn't mean we can help you."
The man removed his hat, revealing long blonde hair tied back. His companion added, "We have no reason to trust you. A mulch could have stolen mendicant clothes and learnt a few words of Canadian. No sane person would arrive here without already establishing ties with Canopy." I took a calculated risk.
"I've got some dream fuel. Does that interest you?"
"Oh, yes. And how in hell's name did a mulch get hold of dream fuel?"
"It's a long